Juno Afternoon is made possible with support from Hanson Grass, delivering IT support to local businesses for over 15 years. Our first guests on today's show are here to preview their Evening at Egan lecture titled Indigenous Cosmopolitanism, Being Cherokee in the Raven Bioregion. We have Mila Neely and also Dr. Saul Neely here on the show. Welcome, both of you.
Thanks, Scott. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
It's so nice to have you here. Evening at Egan, 7 p.m. tomorrow, Friday. It's a free lecture series. Before we go much further, can you two please introduce yourselves?
Yeah, I'm Saul Neely, and I'm a citizen of the Cherokee Nation, in addition to being an associate professor of English at UAS.
I'm Mila Neely. And I am 9 years old, and I'm a citizen of the Cherokee Nation.
Okay. Well, it's an honor to have both of you on today's show. So the title, again, of your talk tomorrow night is Indigenous Cosmopolitanism, Being Cherokee in the Raven Bioregion. Dr. Neely, tell us how this came to be, this title.
Okay. Well, the title actually emerges out of long conversations I've had with Ishmael Hope over couple years now. And we think, you know, about the fact, for instance, that Cherokees historically in the southeast United States had extensive trade networks, right, that went all the way up into the Great Lakes region. And same here in the Pacific Northwest, extensive trade networks. And these trade networks required trade languages or trade jargons. And so, for instance, in southeast Alaska, there was the Mobilian trade language that was used. And Ishmael Hope and I have had plenty of conversations about English language as a trade language of sorts. This is something we actually get from Joy Harjo. And when we think about, you know, I guess what I really appreciate about Ishmael is he really does have a global cultural interest. You know, he will pick up Beowulf as quickly as he'll pick up a book of stories by Yupik Elder John Paul. And, you know, thinking about this intersection of sort of continental philosophical tradition, critical indigenous studies, blending whatever kind of sources of inspiration we can for political issues, social justice, and whatnot. That's a kind of cosmopolitanism that we're calling on. And, you know, the second part of the title is really about, well, how has my Cherokee identity changed over the last 10 years while living here in Tlingit Ani? You know, again, this goes back to Ishmael, and he's introducing the presentation tomorrow night. I asked him to because so much of these conversations come out of our friendship. You know, we think about the way, you know, that my love of Native American literature, you know, that was one of my specialties in graduate school. But then I come here, and it was Ishmael who said, that's great, but don't ever forget the oral literary source material that this is founded on. And so it was really Ishmael who brought me closer to oral indigenous literary traditions, and that has in turn affected my sense of Cherokee identity.
And thinking of your Cherokee identity, I understand you two just went on quite a journey.
Yeah.
Can you tell our listeners about it?
Yeah. What did we do, Mila?
Well, when we were there, we camped up in the Smoky Mountains.
Yeah, so what we did is we spent 2 weeks following the northern route of the Trail of Tears, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where did we begin?
In Georgia.
In Georgia.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Mila, what was maybe one of your favorite parts? I understand it took about 2 weeks. And you got to go with your grandpa as well, right? The three of you?
Mm-hmm.
In 2 weeks, you went along the Trail of Tears. What was one of your favorite parts?
Well, we went to a sacred spring, and the park ranger let us go into the spring since we were Cherokee. And the water spider is a very important animal in the Cherokee culture, because that's the story of the first fire. And when we went into the springs, we saw a bunch of water spiders in the springs.
Whoa. How cool.
And I was wearing my water spider shirt.
That's right.
Wow. What an experience. Saul, for our listeners who may not know much about the Trail of Tears, mm-hmm. can you give us a brief history lesson, please?
Yeah, sure. So the Trail of Tears officially ran from about 1838 to 1839, but it had its, you know, there was treaty after treaty and land cessation, you know, just ceding constant land. And the Cherokee Nation lost a great deal of land, you know, in 150 years before the Trail of Tears. But in 1830, Andrew Jackson signed the Indian Removal Act. And in 1832, there was an important court case, Worcester versus the state of Georgia. And the Supreme Court actually sided with the Cherokee Nation at that time. But Andrew Jackson insisted that the Supreme Court Judge Marshall, Andrew Jackson famously said, he made his decision, now let him enforce it. So basically, he completely ignored the Supreme Court. And in 1835, a small group of Cherokees called the Treaty Party, Elias Boudinot, Major Ridge, and his son John Ridge, and a few others, they signed the Treaty of New Echota, which ceded all of the Cherokee land in exchange for money, payment, and funds to move west into Indian Territory, Arkansas and Oklahoma, what's today Arkansas and Oklahoma. And that was hugely unpopular. In fact, 16,000, like 90% of the Cherokee Nation rallied with a letter and signatures to say, this does not represent the Cherokee Nation. However, by a single vote, the Congress ratified that treaty, and it gave the Cherokees 2 years to get out of there. And in 1838, people were rounded up and forcibly removed. There were 16,000 Cherokees on the Trail of Tears total. 4,000 died. Almost 2,000 of them died in the concentration camps that they built even prior to the removal. And it's just intense. It was an intense to follow that path and to follow that history and to be there, be present on this land that's wounded, that's scarred. You can still feel that kind of ancestral sorrow in certain places like Fort Cass, Tennessee, where there were up to 16,000 Cherokee who were incarcerated there. And our direct ancestors actually lived in the area around Dahlonega, Georgia. And in 1832, they had their land stolen from them because of the first gold rush in the United States. And so our direct ancestors left in 1832. My great-great-great-aunt, Rebecca, and my great-great-great-uncle, Samuel, they stayed behind and they ended up on the Trail of Tears. And what we did is we followed the northern route, which is the longest route, but it's the route that Cherokees who were rounded up in North Georgia, that's the route that they took as well.
Mila, in addition to the water spiders, what was another favorite part of that journey for you?
Well, I really liked all of it, but a lot of times, but when we went on the trip, it was also really fun. We camped out in the Smoky Mountains for two nights in a really nice cabin. And on the first night when we were there, we saw a walking leaf.
Uh-huh.
It was really
Remind us what a walking leaf is.
It's an insect that looks like a leaf, and its wing, it's like the size of a green leaf, and its wings, or it has big wings, and its wings are in the shape of a leaf, and it has little legs, and it like walks up trees, and it's for like camouflage, so it will like go on branches and it will camouflage. And also when we were there, not in the Smoky Mountains but somewhere else, we saw a walking stick. It's like a stick that walks and is cool. And in that same place I saw a really big toad, but it was dark, so I didn't really get to see it, but we, like, heard it hopping, and somewhere else we actually got to see a little toad.
Are you a naturalist?
I don't know.
Lots of great observations.
And I think that was her favorite part, was all the animals that she doesn't see in Southeast Alaska.
And we found a little cicada.
Saw saw cows.
That's great. How about for you, Saul? What were some poignant moments for you?
I think there were three moments when we arrived to our destination and the destination was closed. But somebody there heard our story and opened it up for us. Mm. One case was Chief John Ross, who was principal chief of the Cherokee Nation for 40 years, and he presided over the Trail of Tears. We visited his house, but there was nobody there. There was a phone number associated with the house that I found online, and I called that phone number, told them our story, and within 5 minutes, they had sent somebody down to open the whole house up for us. And Mila and I have been getting into archery, and they had Chief John Ross's longbow in the house, and we got to hold it. That was pretty neat. The Sacred Springs, as Mila was talking about, was really powerful. We talked about it as a kind of Cherokee baptism. And then I think one of the more haunting places was Fort Cass, because what was eerie about Fort Cass is it's all private property now. It's still beautiful, rolling farmland, but there is no memorial there. You know, Fort Cass was 10 miles wide, 16 miles long, but there's no memorial. You know, there's a heritage center, but only a part of that has anything to do with the Trail of Tears. So otherwise, it's mostly concentrated farmland and Baptist churches right now.
Wow. Part of your title is Being Cherokee in the Raven Bioregion, mm-hmm. and you've touched on this a bit, but what are some things that this journey helped you understand about your existence here in Tlingitani?
Four concerns really come up. One, historical violence. You know, you really see that the United States is founded on genocide, and to be there and to see treaty after treaty after treaty just violated and the land taken. And when you go to some of the historic locations of these Cherokee villages and you read the history of them being burned repeatedly by the army, and then you think about the bombing of Cake. Saturday is the 137th anniversary of the bombing of Angoon. You know, you think about what the city of Juneau did to Douglas Island, the Indian village over here in 1962. So thinking about the indelible impression of historical violence across generations. Another one is the forces of memory and counter memory. You know, sometimes we put up memorials, but those memorials smuggle within them counter memory. You know, I was talking about the Fort Cass area. We met a lady there who claimed to be Cherokee. I don't think she was. And was telling us that the Trail of Tears wasn't actually that bad. And it was just a really difficult conversation to have with her because she was sort of repeating all of these lies, and that becomes sort of the narrative memory. I also think about sovereignty, issues of sovereignty. It seems like Cherokee Nation sovereignty is always under attack. But then you think about Central Council President Richard Peterson a couple weeks ago published an op-ed on respecting tribal sovereignty when it comes to the Tongass National Forest, right? And fourth is repair across generations. You know, I've heard Ernestine Hayes say that education saves generations, and I think that this trip that we took has helped save, you know, in my own family, it's saved generations. I have my father's cousins, I have my cousin's children, you know, the spectrum of our family now who is really sort of stepping up and wanting to learn, you know, more about our genealogy and our ancestry. So there's a kind of repair that's at work across generations. And you see that here on Tlingitani as well.
If you're just tuning in, that's the voice of Dr. Saul Neely. He and Mila Neely will be presenting tomorrow night at evening at Egan, 7 p.m. in the Egan Library out at the University of Alaska Southeast. The title is Indigenous Cosmopolitanism, Being Cherokee in the Raven Bioregion. We could keep talking for days, weeks, I suspect, but we should probably just come and see you tomorrow night at 7 p.m.
Excellent, yeah.
And Mila, it was great having you on the show. Any last thoughts to share with our listeners?
When we went to the to John Ross's house, right? Mm-hmm. There was this really big pond, and you got to see there were like geese everywhere. and the reason they wanted to take the fences down, but the only reason we couldn't go see it without the guy was because apparently somebody had made a fire on the back porch and, like, burnt the back deck, so they had to put the gates up.
All right. Thanks for sharing that. Saul, any last observations?
No. Hope to see folks tomorrow night.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
We live on an industrial reservation. We are the Halusa Nation. We have been called the Indians. We have been called Native American. We have been called hostile. We have been called pagan. We have been called militant. We have been called many names. We are the Halusa Nation.